Hi everyone, my name is Ken and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the marathon meetings of the 2005 International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let us please open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. In keeping with our singleness and of purpose and our third tradition, which states that the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking, we ask that all who participate confine their discussion to their problems with alcohol. This meeting will be taped in its entirety. Tapes of this and other meetings are available by filling out the forms in your convention material or by visiting the taping table at the registration area in the convention center. The taping is done in the spirit of carrying the message. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and film. Thus, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker, indeed no AA member, be identified by full name or photograph in published or broadcast reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our effort to help other problem drinkers who wish to share their recovery program with us. And our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before these personalities. The format of this meeting is that the first speaker, and I believe we only have one speaker for this meeting, will share. The second speaker we don't have. I will call on our members of the audience to share. I would request that you please limit your sharing to 3 minutes so that as many people as possible can participate. I will gently remind you to stop if you start to go over 3 minutes. To read this 12 steps, we have Daniel M. from California.
Hi, my name is Daniel. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, We try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
And to read the 12 traditions, we have Ray C. from Oakville, Ontario.
Hi, my name's Ray, and I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Number two, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in a group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, and they do not govern. Number three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Excuse me. Lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks. Thanks.
Now I'd like to introduce our speaker for this meeting, and can you please help me welcome Rick F. of the New Market Group. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Rick. And I am a member of the New Market Group. New Market is just about 30 miles north of here, for anyone who's from out of town. Until I got a call from a friend who had thought that I might want to take part in this. I wasn't going to come to this convention. I've been to a few of our Ontario regional conventions here and enjoyed them very much in the first couple of years of my sobriety, and I was overwhelmed. And walked away with a great. She's not here. And I walked away with a great feeling. I'm glad that friend called me, and I know that today it's all been kind of orchestrated by God, my higher power today, that I am where I'm supposed to be and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to talk about from fear to faith. And I've never had an opportunity to talk about one topic other than myself. And really that's all I know is myself. I'm not an expert on anything and I'm just barely getting to know me. So I'm going to try to share from fear to faith, but to use me as the example, because that's all I really have. Fear's easy. That's I was born afraid. And I was afraid pretty much every day until I finally showed up on June the 3rd, 1994, at my first AA meeting in Newmarket, the group I'm a member of today. And I haven't had to have a drink since then. I don't, you know, even when I went to my first meeting, I was not really sold on the idea of getting sober. It was more about to get my family and friends, to get the police, to get the legal system off my back. And I thought that it would be a good thing to make it look like I was making an effort. And Alcoholics Anonymous seemed like a good place to go. So, you know, I didn't walk in here. I didn't skip in here, you know, looking for something that I have today. I didn't know what I have today was even possible of being had. So to paint a picture of fear to faith, I guess, starts there. And it would be much easier just to do it the other way around, from faith to fear, because I'm pretty sure that's about 6 feet. That's where I was sitting, right over there. And but that seems to go away. You know, I'm always nervous when I speak. It doesn't matter whether it's 3 people or 10 people or more than 10 people. I always get a little bit nervous, but I always have this feeling inside that it's going to go okay. That if nothing else happens, I'm going to get something that I need from this. And really, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to keep me sober. And I've been told that I have to share that, or I have to give it away to keep it. So that's what I'm going to try to do. So on that night, I guess I got a little more time than I had anticipated, so I'll go back just a little bit just to let you know how I got to that night, June 3rd. You see, I believe I was an alcoholic right from the start. I didn't know that when I got here, because when I got here, I figured I was powerless over alcohol probably for the last 2 weeks. You know, the last 2 weeks of my drinking just kind of really spiraled down quick, you know, I could kind of draw a line and say, you know, if it wasn't for those last 2 weeks, I'd probably still be a social drinker. But that's not the case. The longer I've been sober, the clearer it gets for me to see back. You know, and you know, I was sober for a while, and I could see back that back about a year prior to me showing up here, when my fiancée walked out the door and said, I can't put up with this anymore. I can't stay here, and I can't watch you kill yourself. That might have been an indication, but all I saw that was an opportunity for me to drink a little more freely than when she was around. Sober for a little while longer, and I could see back to 8 years before that, when my wife walked out the door, that I probably was an alcoholic then too, because it was a direct result of my drinking. I went back further than that when I was able to see farther back, and I could see when I first went to high school, and I was deathly afraid of people. That I found alcohol a good way to take that anxiety away, and then I can actually see farther back than that. I can see myself, 6 years old, sitting there watching my father have a few beers with my uncle, and watching him change from the serious man that he normally was to a man that was able to have a few laughs and tell a few jokes. And the only thing different about that was the fact that he was drinking this stuff out of that brown bottle. And right then and there, even though I hadn't even tasted alcohol, I had made a decision that I was going to someday, because obviously it must be fun. So my obsession goes back to before I even had a drink. So I showed up here just a little over 11 years ago, And all I knew was fear. And I didn't even come here looking for faith. Like I said, I just came here to get the heat off me. When I called Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a guy that wasn't real friendly. Actually, the first time I called, I got no answer. And I thought that, this Alcoholics Anonymous is a great thing. You know, I tried calling him, and there's no answer. That'd be the perfect excuse for me to say, you know, sometime down the road that, you know, I tried Alcoholics Anonymous one time. It didn't work for me. And leave it at that. But I was hurting bad enough then, and the heat was hot enough that I picked the phone up again in about 15 minutes, and I got a guy. It sounded like I woke him up, right? And he said, "My name's Earl, and I'm an alcoholic, and this is Alcoholics Anonymous." And I said, "Yeah, Earl, I think I have a drinking problem." And he says, "Oh, yeah?" Earl wasn't, you know, overly impressed or concerned about that. just seemed to take it in stride, right? I thought he'd be, there would be some kind of a reaction. I went on to ask Earl about Alcoholics Anonymous, where, you know, where there was a meeting, and he told me where it was. And he asked me, he says, "Do you need a ride?" At this point, I hadn't lost my license yet. It was on its way out, but I hadn't lost it yet. He offered to send someone to get me. And I told Earl, "No thanks, Earl. I can get there myself." I still wanted to leave that option open, that if I come to the door and I looked in the door and I saw something I didn't want to deal with, that I was going to have the freedom to turn around and walk away. I told my parents, I told my friends. My parents wanted to drive me. My friends wanted to drive me. They really seemed to want to get me there to my first meeting. So I declined the offers, and I drove myself. The directions Earl gave me were impeccable. I was hoping at least they'd be wrong. I'd show up at the wrong place and miss the whole thing. But I showed up exactly where I was supposed to be. And in Newmarket at that time, we used to meet at an old, you know, 100-year-old factory building on the third floor. He told me to go to entrance C and go up three flights, and that's where the meeting was in suite 301. So I arrived in the parking lot, and I saw a bunch of people outside having cigarettes and talking and laughing, and I just by the way they were acting, I assumed that they weren't alcoholics. They must be there for something else. So I avoided their gaze as I walked through and up the stairs, and I opened the door at the top of the fire stairs, I heard this noise coming from where Earl had told me to go, I walked slowly towards the noise. I figured I must be going to the wrong place, or there was something else going on in there. But as I got closer to the room, there was a little tiny sign that said Alcoholics Anonymous Newmarket Group, and I realized that I was at the right place. I went back in my memory and thought, well, this doesn't make sense. Earl did say it was an open meeting, and it was open to non-alcoholics as well. I figured maybe there was another door, maybe a staging area for alcoholics, and they would bring us out into this. They sounded like normal people in the front part anyway. I figured I got a little close to the door, and I was looking kind of in and to see what was going on, and this little hand comes shooting out of all the people in the doorway and took me by the hand and shook my hand, you know, and pulled me through the doorway. And that's not the, you know, that's not the biggest miracle. The thing was, I had my hands in my pocket when I was at the doorway, right? And this man managed to shake my hand, pull me through the door, and I stood face to face with a guy, not very big, older man. And he says, "Hello, I'm Ivan, and you're new." I didn't know how Ivan ever figured that one out, you know, because I had gone out of my way to put on my best clothes and make sure that I was clean shaven, my hair was combed, and I really wanted to be refused entry. I wanted to look too good. But I was obviously delusional because I don't think I looked as good as I thought I did, because now when people talk about when I came in from my home group, apparently I didn't look that wonderful. And they're not afraid to tell me that either. So anyway, Ivan, he shook my hand. He says, we'll get you a coffee. And he gets me a coffee. And I get my coffee, and it's only half full. And I think, he's a cheap prick, too. He's only got half a cup of coffee. I didn't realize I was shaking so bad that's as much as I could hold. You know, I found that out at my third meeting when I dropped one on the person that gave me a full cup of coffee. And I realized the half cup of coffee thing. Now, I really didn't want to connect with anybody, so I escaped from Ivan and looked at the literature table over in the corner where nobody goes, right? And I'm standing there pretending to read and study the literature and leafing through it. Like, basically, I'm looking over my shoulder, making sure nobody comes up to me because I don't want to be approached. And I'm looking over this shoulder, and boom, Ivan shows up over this shoulder. And he says, oh, I see you found the literature. He says, we'll help you out here. And he rifled through the literature, and he must have given me 5 years' worth of reading. And he said, this is stuff you'll need. I hadn't even got an actual book yet. This was all just pamphlets, right? And I'm standing there with Ivan, and luckily, Ivan was very well known because somebody started to talk to Ivan again, and I escaped from Ivan again. And I thought, well, I'll sit down, and I won't sit at the front. It's too obvious. And I won't sit at the back. That seems a little obvious, too. I'll sit over there on the side in the middle on the aisle, on the edge, by the window. Now, this room is a warm room. It was 100 degrees outside, and it was probably just a couple degrees less than the surface of the sun inside. It was steaming and sweltering, so the window gave the illusion of coolness. Now, I sat in that room for 2 years getting sober, and in the summertime, we never got a breeze in that window. It looked like there should be. If any air came in that window, it was probably a bird fart. But it wasn't what it looked like. I sat down there and I thought that, okay, I'm safe now, and they're going to start the meeting, and they just were getting ready to start, and Ivan sits down beside me again. Well, this guy's persistent. I am not going to get rid of this man, so I may as well talk to him. So I don't know what to say at an AA meeting. The only thing I even think of asking him is, so how long have you been sober, Ivan? And he says, a little over 29 years. The first guy I meet in Alcoholics Anonymous, he's got a little over 29 years. And I'm looking at him and I'm thinking, I just met the stupidest guy in AA. He's been coming here 29 years, and the poor fool hasn't figured this thing out yet. You know, I figured 3 weeks tops I should have this, right? So I rounded it up. I said, 30 years. And he says, no, a little over 29. Learned very early, we don't round up in AA. Anyway, I sat with Ivan. We watched the meeting went on. At the end of the meeting, they offered some chips, and somebody got up and got a 6-month chip. And you know, that really impressed me, the 6-month chip, far more than this 29-year guy sitting beside me. And at the end, the last chip they offered was a desire chip. And I remember Earl talking to me. I asked Earl the question when I was on the phone with him was, what do I have to do to join? And he says, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. So I figured, well, I guess this is where I show that I have the desire. I at least got to get up and get this chip, even if I don't want it. And I did. And I got that chip. And all my plans for a quick escape were ruined. As soon as the Lord's Prayer was over and everybody kind of, well, they swarmed me. I had phone numbers, I had handshakes, I had hugs, and all I really wanted was a doorway. I met a guy there who took me to another meeting. He took me to a couple more meetings, and I was just getting ready to tell this man that I didn't want this, I didn't want him showing up and taking me to meetings. He had appointed himself my temporary sponsor. Gave me a big book, told me to read it. I thought he meant that night. I went home and I started to read the big book that night. And I got to the chapter on we agnostics, and I had this problem with God. And about two pages in there, I think the word God was used. Like half the words are God in that chapter, right? And the other half are synonyms for God. So by halfway through, you know, my spine is crawling, and I don't know what that's all about, right? So I have to shut the book, and I can't read this anymore. This is just not going to work for me. You know, I shut the book, and I went to bed, and I laid there in a cold sweat, and I tossed and I turned. Nothing different than what had been going on for the last couple of months, right? But I couldn't do it anymore. And it's funny, you know, for a guy that just closed the book because God was in there too much, I said my first prayer in sobriety, and that was, God, just let me have a decent night's sleep, and I'll give this thing an honest shot. And I'd like to, you know, the story would go great if I fell asleep and had a wonderful sleep. It's not how it went, right? I tossed and turned for another 5 or 10 minutes, and I got back up out of bed because it was ridiculous to lay there. And I opened the book back up again, and I continued reading. And I read, and I read, and I read. And I read, and I read. And I was in the 400s when I woke up, face down in the big book at my kitchen table. I know that because there's this big sweaty face mark. That was kind of on two pages and the tablecloth and partway up the wall. But that mark won't go away, right? But it was the best sleep I'd had in a long time. You know, I didn't remember anything I read. You know, I knew I was in trouble because when Gary came to pick me up the next night to go to another meeting and tested me, I wasn't going to know this stuff, right? But he didn't test me. And he talked about God. And he talked about the fact that I could have my own conception of God. And, you know, that kind of hit me. My own conception. Never thought of that. You know, I might be able to live with something like that. Because I can't live with the other conception, my prejudice, what I had dreamed up in my mind from other sources of what God was supposed to be. But when it was about what God would work, how God would work for me, it worked. I have enjoyed a lot of things in sobriety. I've gotten more from this program than I could ever even ask for. You know, sobriety would have been fine on its own, I thought. I would have shortchanged myself if I'd have been happy with just that. Because the things that I received go far beyond that. Things that I didn't know existed. A peace of mind. You know, a fleeting serenity from time to time. Happiness. Even sadness, you know, because I wouldn't allow myself to feel these things. I would drink, and I would just avoid them. I didn't know what feelings were. I didn't know how, you know, when I first got sober and I started to feel all these feelings, I didn't know how to label them. You know, I just thought, I'm all screwed up. I don't know what this is. You know, I feel uneasy. Well, of course I feel uneasy. I never felt this stuff for years. Where are we? I joined that group. I said I've been a member of that group since I joined it. I've been able to stay sober. I've been able to have some sponsees. I got a sponsee here with me tonight. Was nice enough to come down with me today, and until just before I got up here, was sitting in the front row. He moved back just before I started to speak. Apparently he knows I'm a spitter. Yeah. My other friend Jay here apparently didn't know that. He's still up front. The man that met me. Now this is part of the fear to faith thing. My faith has been growing, you know, all along the way, and I'd like to say, okay, I've gone from fear and I am in faith. But the fact of the matter is that I have come from fear, and I am on the road to faith. I have a lot of faith sometimes. Sometimes I have none. Sometimes I have none, and that's when I'm the boss, when I'm in charge. You know, those days aren't so wonderful. When I have faith and I know that things will work out the way they're supposed to work out, and I am where I am supposed to be, and that there's a purpose that I don't necessarily have to know about, those are my good days. The man that met me at the door, Ivan, he got sick. He's a little over 35 years sober, and he contracted cancer. And I really wanted to go and see Ivan, but one of my fears was of death. Not so much my own, but other people. I didn't know how I was going to talk to a man who was terminally ill. I didn't know what I was going to say, what I was going to do. And I took that concern with me one day. The topic came up at a Saturday noon meeting at my home group. And I expressed the fact that I was afraid. I didn't know how to deal with it. And I knew that if I didn't go, I was probably going to feel some kind of guilt or some kind of loss in not having had the opportunity to talk to this man that saved my life. There was another guy at that meeting who felt the same way as me. And he came up to me after the meeting and he says, I feel the same way. He says, you know, but with you being able to share that, I think that maybe we can go down there and we can see him. And we got in the car and we went down to Ivan's house and knocked on the door. His wife told him we were there. He actually got up out of bed, he got dressed and met us in the living room and talked to us for 45 minutes. It wasn't just superficial crap we talked about either. It was, how you feeling? Like, what's it feel like to? Because he had chosen not to take treatment. He had a very bad, I believe it was pancreatic cancer, and he had seen someone go through the treatment process, and he chose not to do that. When I asked him what it was like, and you know, the inevitable question, did you think about having a drink? And you know, without even batting an eye, he says, well, of course not. He says that wouldn't solve anything at all. He says that would just make it more chaotic for my family and for myself. Now, we said our goodbyes. I left Ivan's place that day, and he passed away about a week and a half after that. I'm so glad I got the opportunity to go there. He showed me faith. He showed me faith that worked. I had a little more faith after I left there because the process worked for me too. I went to his funeral, and I stood at his graveside when they lowered the coffin in the ground, and I had in my right hand, in my pocket, I had my my 5-year medallion. I had my 1-year medallion, and I had the original desire chip that I got at my first meeting. And it was kind of the way I shook hands with Ivan and said goodbye at the graveyard. I don't know. Like, I always thought I always used to think I had to have some kind of a purpose or some kind of a need. You know, what was I here for? And I thought, well, you know, when you get sober, maybe you'll figure that out. Well, I'm sober now for a little over 11 years. I don't know. I don't know what I'm here for. I don't know why I'm sober. I know I'm supposed to be. I know I'm supposed to be here right now. I hope that someday, you know, someday when somebody new comes in my home group, or just in whatever group I'm in at the time, I can recognize them as a newcomer. I can put my hand out. I can shake their hand and welcome them to Alcoholics Anonymous. And hopefully, they'll think I'm the stupidest guy in AA. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Rick. The floor is now open to members of the audience to share. If you wish to share on a topic, would you please line up at the microphones, and we ask you to please limit your comments to 3 minutes each. Thank you. On the right, please.
My name's John, and I am an alcoholic. My sober date this time around is May 1st, 1995. So I just celebrated 10 years a little while ago. And being an alcoholic, I never thought I would get this far in life, never mind celebrate 10 years of consecutive days without alcohol. And, this is an amazing thing for this poverty-stricken Native alcoholic coming from another community up in the James Bay area to be in Toronto. To be a part of this international convention. You know, I've been living in Toronto now for just about 16 years. And it's just amazing, you know, that there is Alcoholics Anonymous for a little bum like me. You know, my girlfriend used to think I used to have a big bum. But anyways. I'm really racking my brain about and the way that I felt when the old timers used to tell me that if you're full of fear, you have no faith. You know, and that just ate away at me for a long time. You know, as much as they were right, you know, they didn't give me any suggestions after that. You know. And I found that through coming back that the only way that I'm going to learn faith is when I begin to accept my own fear and walk through it. And for this alcoholic, a day without drinking was full of fear. You know, every day was full of fear. And, you know, like being a father, you know, to three boys that... You know, I'm full of fear, you know. But the only way I'm going to learn from my fear is to pray for faith, you know. That no matter what I go through, no matter what my boys go through, you know, that I will learn to trust that I'm okay with whatever is going on in their life, you know. Whether they're drinking, drugging, you know. Committing armed robbery or, you know, chasing their younger siblings around with a knife and stuff like that. You know, it's something that it's just happening the way it is, you know. And I remember, like, you know, there was nobody there for me but my higher power when my son was out there running around on the Kingston Road Strip out in Scarborough. You know, I only begin to realize that what I put my parents through. you know. And it came back full force with my son a couple of years ago when he was 15 years old. You know, and I it really opened my eyes up to this world that I'm living in, that just because I'm in AA, that doesn't mean I'm exempt from experiencing life. You know, and my son came after me with a butcher knife, you know, and chased me around in my loving home, you know. And I went running down the hallway, and I said, holy shit, I said to myself, like, this is what I used to go through when I was living at home. You know, so I walked back in there and had to check, you know, like, well, he didn't have the knife in his hand anymore. So I told him, I'm going to call the police. And I called the police on my son, you know, and he was picked up walking down the road from in front of my place. And, you know, and he's been in and out of the system for quite a few years, just like me, when I was young at that age. And when I first started coming around, the people used to say that their recovery comes before their family, their wives, their husbands, their kids. I understood then and there, you know, that my recovery comes first. And no matter what, you know, I don't want to live like that anymore. Even if you're my son and you want to live like that, you know, all the best to you. There's always a chair for you waiting, you know. It's empty and it's got your name on it. And I tried to tell him, you know, my experience, strength, and hope. And he says, let me find out for myself, you know, and stuff like that, you know. And, you know, and I thought that, you know, my experience, strength, and hope was going to help him, you know. But my door is always open. He has my phone number and he knows where I live. You know, I love him. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Gerard and I'm an alcoholic. I'm from New York. My home group is Last Call. How you guys doing? And imagine the possibilities. Thank you so much for taking the meeting, but imagine the possibilities. Imagine being able to live a life free of resentment and free of fear. Those promises are given to us from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous driven by fear. Driven by fear. I was afraid of my own shadow. You know, I love that there is a solution to this program. I don't have to live like this anymore. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me that I can get rid of my fear, and there's a plan and there's a way to do it. And it's starting out by doing my fourth step in the inventory process of this program. And as soon as I do that, I write out every single fear. And the big book also tells me that I write my fears down on a piece of paper, whether I don't even have a connection into it with a resentment. And when I write this down, and I get it all down on paper, I do what's called the fifth step, and I read that to my sponsor. And then I go in home, and I sit, and I get in touch with those fears that are coming up. Like, I have a fear that my dad's going to die. You know, my mom died when I was 14 years old, so that's a big fear of mine. I have a fear that I'm going to gain weight in sobriety again and get up to 300 pounds again. That's another fear of mine. I have a fear of financial insecurity. I have a fear of financial security. I have a fear of my home group finding out that I'm gay, that I live in a straight neighborhood. These are the fears that I deal with. I have a fear that I may relapse one day. I have a fear that my sponsees may relapse one day when I am responsible for their recovery and introducing them to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and showing them that there is a solution. So I get all these fears down on paper and I read it to my sponsor. And then I get in touch with these fears, and there is a fear prayer in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it goes, God, please remove my fear of blank. Direct my attention to what you'd have me be, rather than being frightened. See, when I have these fears and I have these resentments and they crop up on me, it gets me closer to God, because he's the master that I have to master these resentments and these fears with, and it gets me closer to him, a God of my understanding, and it brings that to me. And I read this prayer to him, and then I get well. You know, but it's not so that I go and get the house and the car and the kids or the wife or the husband. It's so that I can go and help the next guy dying. See, it puts me on the firing line, and I need help in this. I sponsor a lot of guys. People are like, why am I here? You know? It's because we're here to help people. You know, we're here to show people this solution, that, that it exists. And I'm grateful for that, because this is the stuff. I write out a lot of fears. I've written out a fears list and an inventory before I came here. And I read them to my sponsor, because they will always crop up. But I can always get rid of them and pray. And then when they crop up, I bring them to God, and I get a closer relationship through God, through my 6 and 7 steps. I mean, it's a miracle. This person who is driven by fear is not. I trust God today. I try not to play God today. And it's this amazing thing. You know, I can live a life. And as a result of doing this program, I get the life beyond my wildest dreams. I get to show up for my family. I get to be there. I get to not be the tornado roaring through these people's lives. Because that's me. I'm the mess. I'm the black sheep of the family. That's what my dad used to call me, the black sheep. And today, the sheep ain't black, so thanks.
Hi, friends. My name is Ron. I'm an alcoholic. Fear to faith, I look at it this way for myself, that fear got me into AA, and the faith keeps me here. When I decided to change my life, and I had three choices in front of me, that the way that I looked at it was, I could go on living the misery that I had as an existence, or I could take my own life, or I could ask for help. And for me, asking for help was the easier, softer way, because I was a coward. I was too scared to kill myself, and I was too scared to go on living the way that I was living. So I reached out for help, and I made a deal with a God that I never believed in that night, and it was that, you know, if he provided me with some help, that I would do my best. And that's what I've done every day since. And it just amazed me, from somebody that didn't know that the 12-step program even existed out there, you know, and as soon as I reached my hand out, I was engulfed. You know, I come from Edmonton, Alberta. My home group is Altered Attitudes. It's a men's stag group. And I just love it. I love this program. And the faith that I have today, I mean, a friend in the fellowship came to me on Sunday and said, let's go to Toronto. Said, how are we going to do that? He says, well, we'll make it happen. And three of us jumped in my car, and we drove 36 hours, and we got here Wednesday. And you know what? This has just been the ride of my life. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love everybody in this room. I loved everybody in that room tonight, you know. And my faith, man, and everything that happens today is just unbelievable. Like, I truly believe that God has a plan for me and every one of us, you know. And when I encounter one of you walking around out there, I you know, that's, to me, is the face of God. God's put somebody in front of me for a reason today. And I just, you know, to have my eyes open so much in such a short period of time. I'm only 16 months I got today. And I love it. I love it. You know, being who I am, you know, when I like something, I want more of it. So I'm going to keep coming back. And you know, to be here at this this world convention is just unbelievable. And you know, I'm planning already 5 years from now, if I put $10 a day away, I can meet you guys all in Texas. And hopefully the same buddy comes in, and you know, he phones me on Sunday, because I think it's about the same drive from Edmonton to here as from Edmonton to Texas, so we can make it happen. So right on. God bless you all.
Hi everybody, my name's Mark. I'm an alcoholic. I really liked your talk there, Rick, and helped me out. I was having a hard time with faith, and I'm just newly back in recovery, and I have a sponsor, and I talk to him all the time about it. And the biggest thing I have the hard time with is faith, because I didn't believe in God anymore, because I had things happen to me in my life, and I thought, you know, he didn't help me when I was drinking, he never helped me when I got sober once before, and damn, he's not helping me now. He's always taking things away from me. But my sponsor reassured me, he never took anything away from me. I was giving it back because I wasn't working for what I wanted. And that was his love, because my God is a loving God. He's an understanding God. He's a caring God, and he's a giving God. And I just have to open up and let him know that I need these things. And today, I try a day at a time, and I just thank everyone for being here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from New York, and 79th Street Workshop is my home group. Fear. I remember coming back into the rooms, going down those steps. Fear of you guys eating me up alive. Fear of coming up to this microphone. Fear of relapsing, and that's what's kept me sober this little bit amount of time. Fear of a lot of things. But like you said, fear of coming up to this conference in itself. This is my first conference ever. And there's words cannot express. It's just overwhelming. This does not cover the range of emotions and the joy that I'm feeling right now. Like you said, I'm struggling. Because without you guys, without every single person in this room, I have truly met beautiful and wonderful people. Because without it, I wouldn't have 105 days today. And I really couldn't have made it. And I'm just so full of gratitude and joy. And I just had to say that. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, friends. My name is Ray, and I am an alcoholic. My home group is the Monday night as Bill sees it in Kingston, Ontario. My sobriety date is March the 28th, 2003, and that is a miracle that a person like me can get sober. I never thought it ever possible. It was funny, when I was out there, I never thought I had any fear in my life. But this program of Alcohol Anonymous made me realize that my life was so fearful that I could not do anything. Everything in my life was fearful. I had different names for it, but it was all fear motivated. Everything that I did in my life had fear in it. And today, through my sponsor, the big book, AA, all you people, I don't have the fear I used to. And I have a lot of faith in a lot of things. When I first came in, God was the furthest thing from my mind. I did not want anything to do with him. He took a lot of people and away from out of my life, and a lot of people died in my life, so I didn't think I could even come close to him. So my sponsor at the time was my higher power, and he told me just to keep coming back because he knew I was very angry. I was a bitter person. And, you know, the first time I ever came to AA was 2 years actually before that. And the only reason I went was for fear. I thought I was just going because I was going to keep my job, because my boss told me maybe I should check this out. I thought, well, maybe I'll just go to please him. And I realized today that that was all fear motivated, because I was so afraid that I'd lose my job. I went not because I thought I was going to get any help. It was all fear. But my life today, the miracles in my life today, the miracles I've seen, the miracle at sitting at a conference, everybody sitting there was a miracle, and I'm learning this more and more. My sponsor feeds it into my head constantly that I am a miracle, because, like I said, I'm so fear-motivated that I didn't think I was worth anything. And he tells me every day that I'm a miracle, and I'm starting to believe it, and that's because I'm starting to get faith in my life. God now has become my higher power, and it's the one I rely on. And I know through him and Alcohol Anonymous that I have things in my life today that I didn't have. I have my kids back in my life. I have an ex-wife that I could sit down and talk to when I have problems. We're not back in a marriage, but I can talk to her, which I had so much fear of her that she was going to take my kids away from me, even though it was me leaving my kids. And today I know when I drop to my knees and pray, and I pray for the things that I want, and my resentments, that's how I take care of my resentments today. I pray everything that I want those people to have, the people that I resent. Some miracle happens. I don't have a resentment towards these people anymore. And I start to love these people. The love that I can show today isn't the love I had before. Love before was lust. Today I have love for everybody in this room, most 99% of the people that I meet on anywhere is love. I have the care and compassion for people today that I never had. I didn't have any care or concern for anybody in my life, even family, friends. And the biggest miracle that's ever happened is I have a family that goes all around this country, and this convention has proved that. I can talk to anybody on the street with one of these tags on, and they will stop and talk to me. They don't turn their nose up and snub me. They'll actually say hi, and they'll shake my hand, and that is a miracle. And there is miracles that happen every day, you know. Every day when I wake up, it's a miracle that I wake up. And I don't have to have a drink. And that's the thing, you know. I heard you talk about your desire chip. My desire chip is in my pocket. It is I take that out in the morning, and I look in the mirror, and the first thing I say is, Ray, you are an alcoholic. And the miracle is that I have a choice today. I choose every morning not to drink. And I held my chip, and I put it back in my wallet for another day. And that is a miracle that I am still not drinking today. Thank you very much.
My name is Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. The fear thing, you know. My ma died when I was 2 years old. You're talking about the death thing. That used to be one of my problems. My ma died when I was 2 of leukemia, and my dad was an alcoholic. I got taken away from him when I was 5 years old, you know, and luckily I had an aunt and uncle that took me in as their son and tried to love me, but I couldn't let them do that because it always got taken away from me, you know, my ma dying, my dad. I couldn't let nobody in here. I had to set some walls up because they always left if I let them get in there, you know, and I went through life doing that in relationships and stuff. I never had one. Couldn't let it happen. Couldn't let them in because they'd leave. I can remember sitting on the couch with my aunt, you know, and my brother sitting on the side, and I could see that look in her eyes, and it'd terrify me, and I'd stay awake at night knowing they'd be gone in the morning, you know, and doing the fourth and fifth step and getting that stuff out, you know, I look at it, and I went to the spiritual retreat here a few months back, you know, and God busted them walls down, you know, and I can love today, you know. And when I got out of there, I had to go test drive it on my sister, and it was a pain. It really hurt when I said I love somebody. That shit really hurt, and now it don't hurt today, you know, and it's easy to love, man. And my dad was in the hospital, you know. He was on his way out there. We thought for sure he was on his way out, and I get back from this retreat, you know, and I just want to go in there and tell him, Dad, If heaven's anything like I just experienced at this retreat, man, just go ahead and let go and go on home because this is some good stuff, you know. And my sister's like, man, don't go in there and say some stuff like that to him. But it's totally awesome, you know. I got a God of my understanding, and all them fears are gone because he's in charge, and I ain't got to take control of nothing, you know. And it's a beautiful thing. Thanks.
My name's Brad, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the bilingual meeting at the Beijing Club of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been an extremely emotional weekend for me, accompanying these Chinese folks from the People's Republic. Thank you for your share, by the way. 5 years ago, I was, as fate would have it, I was the gentleman that the doctors called to see if we can carry the message. And if I can get through this without crying, it'll be amazing. They called me and said that there was some Chinese guys that there's a couple that could use our help. I had a few years of sobriety at the time, and you know, as trying to be a responsible AA member, I jumped to the task. And my sponsor, who I had arranged to take the message to the hospital with, had to beg out of the visit, and I was there left alone with the Chinese in the meeting to show them, to go to the hospital to show them how to run a meeting. And I felt like the weight of AA was on my shoulders, and of course that was very self-centered, because it would do very well without me. But that being said, it was an honor to be part of this fellowship and to pass the message. Shortly after, maybe a year, year and a half, after a few guys had gotten sober, this is like 2001, 2002, to show you how the message is being spread and how it's really the language of the heart, Mr. Ma, who many of you may have heard of or heard speak, and I, after he had a couple of years of sobriety and learned enough about AA and how it works and working the 12 steps, he and I went up to visit a member who had spent a few months in the hospital and had learned about AA and was up in the northeast of China and had tried to stay sober and was staying sober but really missed the AA fellowship, the small group of guys, and wanted us to come up and visit and also share our experience, strength, and hope with some of his friends that he felt like could really use an AA meeting. Well, when the weekend ended and we had several meetings over the course of the weekend, his daughter had come from spring break from college and had come back, and at the end of the weekend, Sunday night, we were sitting around about 11 o'clock at night, and we were just sitting there, like, just her mom, her dad, and another friend, and myself and Mr. Ma. I asked her, so what do you think of your dad now that he's not drinking? And boy, did she fired back. She said, you know, a month ago when I was planning on coming back home, I just did not want to come home. That's the last thing I wanted to do, and see my dad. You know, that you know, he treated me poorly. He's just a rotten father, and I didn't want to see. I wanted to come home to see my mom. That's the only reason I came home. And I asked her, well, what do you think of your dad now? And she said, I don't want to go back to college. And so that's how the message is spread. We're doing the best we can, and we appreciate your support and your welcoming of the Chinese, and it's just an honor to be part of this thing. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Victoria, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is Crossroads in Utica, Michigan, and I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing, and I wasn't working the steps. I joined AA, but I did not become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and therefore the fear ran my life, and I took my last drink on April 15th of 2005. And I would just like to thank all of you for this weekend. It's just amazing about how many people are here, and this all started with two men. And my faith is definitely restored after coming here. And not only that, I have hope today. And I know it gets better. I know this program works, and I just want to thank all of you. So,
hi, I'm Patty. I'm an alcoholic. Sounds weird. My home group's the Burbank group, Thursday night in Fitchburg, Mass. Massachusetts, and my sobriety date is July 1st, 1984. And so I did want to speak, like during my anniversary day, I wanted to get up, but I don't know, I'm just too proud, you know, too nervous, disguises itself as pride sometimes. And it was funny, I was here last night. And to do with fear and faith, I have a healthy fear today. Like, I was here last night, and a couple of the girls that I was with, they went back to their respective hotels, and I'm listening to the group and meeting, and all of a sudden I realize it's 2 o'clock, and I was supposed to go over to the Metropolitan, which is downtown, you know, quite a few miles away from here, and I'm like, I can't go. You know, I have 2 young children, and I have myself. I mean, I'm not going to walk through a subway and through a town, you know, in the middle of the night. And so I tried to stay awake for the whole thing. And, you know, but my pride, I could have asked. I could have come up to the mic and said I had a little dilemma, and maybe a couple people would, you know, bring me over or something. But you know, I'm not a good person for keeping things inside, you know. And I've always liked discussion meetings. In fact, the evening meeting that's my home group is a speaker discussion. But, you know, I just get stuck now and then. Today, I have, you know, when I think about it, I have tons of faith. And my sobriety is totally to the grace of God and the fellowship. Because I almost had a slip on the 15th of February this year. And I was in a bar. And I was very determined, you know, I'm not going to say I was determined or anything, but I was definitely going to drink. And I decided to have a cigarette after about 5 years of none. And my taste buds wanted a Coke. And so, but after I had some Coke and a cigarette, you know, I calmed down. My natural tiredness came back. I stopped being angry. And I just went home, and it was the grace of God that did that for me. That wasn't me at all. It wasn't Patty. And I don't know. I probably should have more fear of booze, I guess. You know, I'm certainly not going to put myself in those kinds of situations. If I get angry, you know, I'll try to remember when. Because I asked one of my best friends to give me a coin here at the conference. And I certainly didn't want it at a big meeting or anything, but I was thinking, you know, maybe a few people. And one of my girlfriends would probably have gotten a card, or maybe, you know, had a few people, you know, organized it. But my friend Larry bought me this necklace. And it's kind of funny because after the big meeting tonight, I'm holding on to it. I'm like, you know, I really need this, like, right here. I don't need it in my pocket. I don't need it in my purse. You know, that I left at home or something, or in my room or in my car. It's just a really real blessing to be in the program and to have friends and a new life. And my mother used to call my mom Saint Helen. You know, it wasn't really a bad thing, just a nickname. You know, now and then, joking. And you know, when I had like 9 months sober, she asked me to pray for a problem that she had. Because she saw this spirituality in my life. And it's comes and goes, you know, the quality of my sobriety is like, to me it's relative to the quality of my life. I came in fairly young, you know, if you can imagine, I was only like 8, but no, really I was young, you know, a little bit older. I guess I fit into the young people's group because it wasn't really like young people. It was young people that had been through you know, turmoil and drinking and becoming an alcoholic. And but I don't know. I had a lot of fun with that. I forget where I was going with that, but it was really good to hear you. At first, I couldn't concentrate too much. I was thinking of some other things. And but then your sense of humor, it's like, it's, I don't know if I don't know the right word, but you know, you just state it matter-of-factly, and it's just so funny. And I don't know. It came and left again when I was talking, but what I was going to say. But otherwise, it's good to be here. Thanks a lot.
Can we just have one more person sharing, please? We better cut it off after that because there's another meeting starting after that. So. You're standing, so...
I didn't hear you, so I didn't know what you're saying.
Go right ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. My name's Joe. I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful today, this morning. I'm sober through the grace of God. There go I. I got sober in South Boston. I joined, you know, later on I joined the group. You know, I remember my sponsor. Later on I got a sponsor. I just went to meetings and went to meetings. But when I first hit my bottom, I'll tell a little bit about that. I hit my bottom. I didn't know when I hit a bottom. I got into a fight the night before. I got a black eye, broken ribs, and then I went home. Sometimes I used to sleep behind a dumpster. I didn't want to go home, and that's why I used to sleep, you know. But after that, when I hit my bottom, I walked to work with a black eye and broken ribs, and I was walking to work, and I asked God to help me, you know, and I meant it. You know, I didn't know at the time I meant it, because I couldn't get drunk. I couldn't get stoned anymore. It wasn't working for me. And went to work. They hired somebody at the company, what my uncle owned. And at that same time, they hired somebody at the company, and I trained him. And he was happy, and I was miserable. And I didn't know why I was so miserable, and I felt very hateful. And I feel like that tonight sometime, in a way, because I'm so tired, you know. But anyways, I did that. I was going to a gym at the same. I was going to a gym, and here I am going to go work out. I had broken ribs and a black eye, and I went to the gym. And he was coming down the stairs in the Gavin House in South Boston, and he planted that seed. And I'm always going to be grateful for an alcohol putting out his hand to me when I didn't know what I didn't know. And he told me, he planted, and he told me, you know, you can have what I have. And he was going to give me a meeting list book, and I told him I don't know how to read and write. And he goes, you know, I don't know how to read and write either. And those are the things I realized, because I had so much fear. Because I thought I was less than, and I didn't have no self-esteem. You know, I didn't have a lot of stuff. The material things I had, but I didn't have myself. And I had myself, my sex, and anything else like that. But then I realized later on, but I was fear because I didn't think nobody would like me because I didn't like myself. I was very miserable inside. I didn't show it. I didn't know how to react or whatever. But when I put down the drink and the smoked weed, I had a lot of anger. I had a lot of rage. And I had a lot of resentments and what the other guy was saying. But then I started, you know, the inside job, started working on those steps. And when even I didn't know how to read and write, I did the best I could, and my first sponsor, you know, God love him, because I tell you, he helped this drunk. He helped this drunk because he was hard, he was tough. Tough love. That's all it was, plain and simple. And I didn't know why he was. I thought he was a hateful person, you know, because he was really hard, you know. But I loved them, you know, when I didn't know how to love myself. People loved me, but I couldn't love myself. I didn't know what that was, because I always, like, you know, don't get next to me, don't hug me or nothing like that. And I didn't know, understand, because my father never hugged me, you know. I didn't know what that was, you know. I was fear of that, you know. Another guy hugging another guy, you know, I didn't know. And those are the things I realized. But the most important thing is I went to a lot of meetings with my sponsor. He introduced me to people because I was scared, I was shy, I had so much fear. Because when I first spoke at a podium, you know, I turned around, there was maybe 200 people. It was in Boston. It was at the in Boston at the and he was there, and he wanted me to share, you know. And he goes, "Go ahead, kid," you know. And I was so scared. I turned around and I said, "My name is Joe, and I'm a good alcoholic. A good alcoholic and a good dope head, you know." And today I know I'm not a good dope head, because I wouldn't be here if I was a good dope head. And those are the things I know. I had to learn to grow up, you know, saying I don't have to have all the answers. And I remember my sponsor told me, he goes, you know, I had everything, but I thought I had everything, material stuff, I didn't have myself. He goes, "Kid, if you think you know everything, why you're in AA me, you know?" And that really hurt my pride. And he was telling me the truth, you know. The truth will piss you off, also it will set you free. And I didn't understand that. I couldn't comprehend a lot of stuff he was telling me. But after a while, he kept on telling me most important was the first step. And he was always reading that first step to me. And he was waiting for me to say, you know, that word, you know, that word, and I had so much resentment against my sponsor. And then someday I had a resentment. Then I told him what my resentment was towards him, because I didn't know what a resentment was really at the time either, you know, because I didn't know how to read and write, so I didn't know what a resentment was. But I had so much anger, so I used to hit the speed bag, the punching bag, and everything else like that, and run and get over that anger, that aggravation out of me. Sometimes I had the shakes and rat and rope because I didn't know, I didn't go through a detox or halfway house or anything like that, but all those things I went through, the rat and roe and stuff, and I was wondering why people went through all that stuff, you know, and it was just the grace of God, you know, putting that person in my life. You know, I had some awesome friends, and I've lost some awesome friends that went back out and died, you know. And that's why I'm so grateful, because I hold on to my seat like it's my life. It's something I never would imagine, you know, me being sober and doing something positive with my life today. It's a positive stuff. You know, like I came in here, I was like run down. I just got done something to eat, put something in my stomach, felt a little bit better. But it's a you know, I went to my, he took me to my first conference in Boston, somewhere in Western or something like that. He took me in, and he knew I didn't have no money, because I was selling, at the time I was selling weed, you know, when I was sober. I was selling some dope. I was selling weed. And he caught me. He goes, "Kid, what are you doing?" He goes, you know, he didn't trust me, I imagine. And he kept an eye on me, you know. And he goes, "Get in the car." I go, "For what?" He goes, "You know, I just get in the car." And he goes, "Where'd you get the stuff at?" You know, I said, "I sell it for somebody else to make quick money." So he goes, "Where is it? Where's the address?" And we went and I gave him all the stuff, you know. I gave him the money and the dope, and the guy looked at me like, you know, wow, you know. And then we just left, you know. That was plain and simple. You know, my sponsor afterwards, he goes, "Kid, you know, you could have went back out." And I didn't understand that, you know. I just didn't understand. But that's why I said later on he took me to my first conference in 92. You know, I got sober in 91. And I'll always be grateful for my first sponsor, because he taught me something what I didn't understand. It's a little bit more about the steps and working an inside job and working on myself. And these are the things I can do today, sober. You know, I'm still going to school. I'm off right now from school. I'm so grateful for. You know, I have dyslexia. And these are the things I find out sober, you know. And I went through a lot of stuff in sobriety. I'm still going through some stuff right now at this time. But, you know, the bottom line, I don't have to drink. Whatever's going on in my life, I don't have to drink. You know, the only problem I have is that short of whiskey, or my Jack Daniel, Wild Turkey. Those are the things I used to drink. And thank you. Thank you.
I'd like to thank Rick for being our speaker, for Daniel for reading 12 steps, and for Ray for doing the 12 traditions, and especially all of you for participating in this meeting. Now, would those who care to please join me in closing the meeting with the responsibility pledge. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible. Thank you very much.